Welcome back to Nocturnal Journal on WGN. Get your tape recorders ready. We're getting Chicago radio history here with our dear friend Aubrey Mumpower.
The reporters have been disabled here.
I'm so excited about this. I haven't known you. You've been with me for 4 years here. A broadcast engineer since 1986 at WGN. You're going to be retiring at the end of the year, so you can go over to Navy Pier and enjoy all that stuff over there. Man, I really want to get into your whole history, but you've got a background. Talk about your roots in Dallas and in Cheyenne. It's like a movie. So talk about your beginnings with your family and radio.
I was born in Dallas. I was going to start the thing out. It was a long, hard night in Texas. I was 2 weeks late. My mother was desperate. Anyway, after I was born, 2 weeks later, we moved to Wyoming. And that's essentially where I was raised until 18 when I came to Chicago. My dad worked on the railroads. We lived all over the country, Los Angeles, Denver, Aspen, places in Dallas. But Cheyenne was the main deal.
What railroad did he work for? What did he do?
Union Pacific, and he was a fireman and engineer. He drove the train, and he was hoping I'd do that someday too.
He was, yeah,
but almost did. But and they hired me too, but my chief engineer here in Chicago wouldn't let me go. He says, if you leave, you can't come back.
What was your dad's name?
Ernie Mumpower.
Yeah. And I mean, radio is in your blood. Maybe after the news, we'll get into what you do here, what exactly a broadcast engineer does. But your grandmother had a cooking show on the radio in Dallas in the 1930s. Yeah. What was that about?
Well, she'd just get on there and talk like Julia Child for 30 minutes, and they'd do a cooking show every day on one of the Dallas stations. And one thing I hadn't looked into but can't find out too much about it, my uncle, who was 30 years older than my dad, it was kind of a mixed-up family back then, he had a string of theaters from Dallas to El Paso. And back in those days, they didn't have Hollywood, and they didn't have much going on here in Chicago either. These theater owners would go out and shoot their own movies. They were silent mostly. And he lived on the Texas-Mexico border. And so he'd get a lot of his Mexican friends together, and they'd have a war and film it, and that would be the movie.
Wow. And wow.
So it was pretty low budget, but he didn't live very long, but he did all right, you know, for his age, and kept him busy.
And then your mother sang on radio in the 1950s.
She sang on the radio, yeah, in one of those church shows back when those were public service shows. You didn't have to buy time. So I was exposed to it. I was always near a control room,
yeah,
whether it be broadcast or the church.
So did she sing gospel?
Yeah.
Gospel. And your mother's name?
Martha.
So, like you just said, it was this business and the magic of radio was just in your floats and jets. It was just always around you.
I was always attracted to the equipment. And growing up as a preteen, a teenager, I listened to WLS a lot back when they changed in formats. But even before they changed, you could get the 50,000-watt stations out of Chicago, out into Cheyenne, like they were local stations, when the sun would go down. So I was attracted to that.
Which you can do with this station.
You can get WGN there.
Yeah.
Not like the old days, but you can still get it out there.
Yeah, you're the one who, when I first came on here, you told me the 38 states,
yeah,
Mexico and Canada thing.
Yeah, don't make any mistakes. You get hate mail from around the world.
What does a broadcast engineer do? When they say broadcast engineer, what are your duties with me? I mean, you've helped me not make too many mistakes here.
Well, it's kind of broken down. You know, part of it's operating the equipment, and they don't always have engineers doing that, but another part would be design and maintenance of the equipment and the facilities. And I've been here through three facilities. They hired me here when they moved back downtown to Tribune Tower. So I helped out building the studios over there. And they're very efficient about it. The chief engineer says, this is what we're going to do. This is when we're going to do it. And this is how we're going to do it.
I don't even know. Where were they at before Tribune Tower?
Bradley Place.
They were at Bradley Place.
Which is up Addison and Western area. Yeah,
where the television station is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in the old days, they were down here in their own building in Tribune Tower.
I know we've talked. I mean, how did it feel to disassemble the Tribune Tower studio and come over here?
I didn't have to do that. That was somebody else's job. But it was heartbreaking. But you knew all the work that went into it to design an old analog facility, which we probably had 50 miles of audio cable strung around the
50
place.
Miles of audio cable.
Yeah, we don't do that anymore. It's all digital now.
Yeah. Yeah,
and just you can have multiple signals just going down a network line now.
So, in layman's terms, designing a studio, what goes into it? What, how do you make a good studio?
Oh, make two or three bad ones first. what we had over at Tribune Tower was very nice for what it was, and we kind of outgrew it. In many ways, and it was big. It was really spread apart. It took up the whole floor, first floor of the Tribune Tower. And so we rebuilt Studio D, the Showcase Studio.
Showcase Studio, people know that.
2001, I think it was. And that was quite an improvement over what we had. But what we had was pretty old technology, too, as far as the audio boards and the playback equipment. And we had a traffic board hanging on the wall that was controlled by some mainframe computer somewhere, and it blew up, I think, the first year we had it on. So after that, it was just wallpaper.
Growing up around all this, I want to talk about how this had to feed, growing up in a world of radio and your parents and grandmother being involved with it, how it fed your imagination.
I first saw Chicago when I was 14 years old.
Yeah.
We went to the World's Fair. We drove out to New York, and then I had.
So you're talking about the New York World's Fair.
Yeah. I had to go back to Cheyenne. I'm not sure if it was maybe it's one up in Canada in Montreal. I got the two mixed.
Oh, Expo 67. That would have been Expo 67. Well, anyway, yeah.
I think the one we went to in New York was 64.
60, that was New York World's Fair, right?
So anyway, I had to take the train back to Cheyenne for some reason. And we had a layover in Chicago, and so I spent the afternoon at LaSalle Street Station. But I went out and explored. The one thing I wanted to do was go to WLS and meet and see Dick Biondi and Art Robertson, those guys I was growing up with. And I didn't see them, but I met some pretty girls there, and we hung around the station for a while anyway. And I got a couple of new pen pals out of the deal. And from that point on, I went back and forth between Cheyenne and Chicago and got my feet wet learning of what an urban area was like.
The 60s and that rock and roll radio, that was, I mean, I did the same thing. I mean, you would come, I've talked about this on the show before, I mean, you'd come down and Larry Lujek be working on Saturday morning at WLS, and I think CFL was at Marina City.
Yeah, yeah.
And they were, in a town like Chicago, they were celebrities.
They certainly were and are.
Yeah.
I wanted to work with Dick Biondi and Art Roberts, so I wanted to come out here.
You got me.
Get into one of those big stations. The station I was working for in Cheyenne, they didn't want me to leave. They said, well, they won't let you in the front door in Chicago. Those are powerhouses. They're seeking professionals, not losers like you. So, but after I got out of high school, I came out here. We went through the phone book, and I went to four radio stations and one TV station. And I had offers from all of them, but I had experience in television, 3 years' experience in television in Cheyenne already, so I wound up at Channel 26.
WCIU-TV.
Which is a whole new, different book.
Yeah. You started there in
67,
and you were there until January of 86?
Yeah.
And that, I mean, maybe we'll talk a little bit about that after the break, but that's 16 different languages on that
On the television? Weekend, yeah, yeah. I learned to cuss in 16 different languages.
And what all did you do there when you?
Typical engineering work, videotape, telephone, transmitter, technical director, or switcher, they call it, and audio.
Somebody said your skill there was you did almost the impossible with nothing. I mean.
Yeah, well, they were they're very understanding over there. When we'd go into union negotiations, Howard would say, well, we'll give you anything you want as long as it doesn't cost anything.
Yeah.
So that was kind of typical of the business back then, just trying to survive. But survive they did. And now they're a success story here in Chicago and around the world.
But going to your roots, you really, your love was really always radio.
Yeah.
And then so you came here, and then we'll take a break for the news here. But you built a new radio station in Tribune Tower, and we'll talk a little bit more about that.
Okay.
So don't go away on Nocturnal Journal with our friend Aubrey Mumpower.
Good job.
Did you ever have a talent who would put the hand over their ear like that, like Gary Owens used to do on Laugh-In?
Well, before headphones, yeah.
Yeah, that was what they would do. Yeah. So I wanted to, we got a few more minutes with you. Aubrey Mumpower, our beloved broadcast engineer who is retiring at the end of the month.
Yeah.
Talk about your greatest hits. We were talking about just really interesting experiences in radio or television.
Different things that have happened. We were talking about, there's so many different things, and some of it we can even talk about here. But the one I remember that sticks out in my mind is we had shows like Marty Faye's show. Filled End Interview, Ted Weber in Old Town, John and the Angels, shows like that. I think it was Marty Faye's show. We had a circus bear come up for some reason or other, and they'd do tricks and stuff like that. And then as we were leaving, we had a dedicated elevator from the 43rd floor to the first floor. And they just kind of, this bear was pretty tame, and they just kind of, not really caring or paying any attention, they dropped the leash on him, and when the elevator opened up, the bear charged into the interview into the elevator, and the door slammed shut, and the thing went down to the first floor
just with the bear in the elevator.
With the bear in it, so the people waiting down to the first floor for the elevator, the doors opened up, and they looked in there and said, "Well, I'm not going in there." So the doors slam shut, and the elevator goes all the way back up to the 43rd floor again.
Real briefly, talk of who Marty Faye was.
Faye. He would sell vacuum cleaners on the air, and Howard Shapiro ran a furniture store as well.
And Howard Shapiro was?
He eventually wound up controlling Channel 26. Mm-hmm. We had John Weigel and then Bill O'Connor, an announcer here at WGN in those days, in the 50s, and Howard Shapiro, which owned CET. You could buy a television set at CET, and when you watched it, you'd have to put quarters in this quarter meter bank for, I guess it's a quarter for 15 minutes or 30 minutes or something like that. And that's how they paid for the TV sets.
Wow.
So that was the business model. And Weigel and those, they got the station on the air, the transmitter in the space in the Board of Trade building, and it probably cost them $50,000 for the whole thing. But after that, it was trying to decide, well, what do we do with this? And they played old shows like December Bride and Our Miss Brooks and Dobie Gillis, shows like that. And then eventually we got into ethnic programming, and especially heavy into Spanish, because all the other stations ignored that, like it didn't exist.
Yeah.
But we did have ethnic radio, which they had a guaranteed audience for everything that they did. And when we went ethnic, we did too. And people laughed at us then. There's no market for that. As well, we think there is.
Wow.
So we stayed with it. And Don Cornelius started Soul Train there.
Yeah.
Right. He sang, I'm going to have me a dance show, just like Big Bill Hill.
And we'd all Bill Hill, yeah.
Yeah, we all laughed at him. Says, well, we've already got Big Bill Hill and Kitty and Go-Go, and, you know, they're doing all right, but, you know, one more show, it's not going to make a difference. He says, no, really, I got Coca-Cola and Sears. They're going to sign on to it. We're going to do it. And sure enough, he did. Yeah. And the rest is history.
Yeah, people really underestimated some of those emerging demographics in the city of Chicago.
Exactly,
you know?
Yeah,
yeah. What are you gonna do in your retirement?
Oh, I don't know. I'll probably just hang around for a week until somebody calls me back to work somewhere. that. So could you stop by just for a couple of minutes and point to what we got to do and just put an X, you know, in the general area where we have to work. But I don't know. I'll probably kill some time for a month or two, and I'll probably head out west, maybe.
I was going to ask you, do you still have family out there?
No, I lost my parents a few years back. Yeah. They're in their 90s, and I've got one brother. He's in Denver, and he's a little bit younger than I am.
Well, the reason I asked that about family, and when they were alive, you talked earlier in the interview about, they didn't know about you coming, you know, especially peers coming to the big city of Chicago. What was the feeling like with your family and friends when you made it here?
My dad wanted me to work on the railroad, and I said, well, I'd give it a try, but the working on the railroad back then, you could count on 20 years of, you'd establish your seniority, and when you worked, you made a lot of money, but then you'd get laid off for 2 or 3 months or 6 months, and that's why we had to move all over the place. But we'd eventually wind up back in Cheyenne, and I didn't want to go through that, and I'm just in love with radio. I wanted to be able to talk fast and be funny like those guys that you'd hear on WLS, you know.
And you've got a great nocturnal voice. You've got that soft-spoken, you and I.
I've done very little radio, and the one time I did it in Cheyenne, the boss man called me, and he says, you are banned from radio for life.
Why? Did you say something that you can't say here?
No, he said I was too funny.
Oh, really?
But I wasn't too funny. You know, my mistakes were funny.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
I didn't know what I was doing. I was filling in for... I worked back in television. I did voiceover for if a tape would break, then I'd follow along in the copybook, and I'd have to read it live. And some things we did live anyway, like the obituaries. Those were live every day. And they'd sabotage. My crewmates would sabotage the copy. And I'd get copy like Joe Blow died with his boots on. He didn't know the gun was loaded. Stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
And I'd have to do that straight. And they go, no, that's not the way to do it. And now the weather brought to you by Conoco, the hottest brand going. So I did stuff like that. But the radio thing, I'd have Barbara Streisand and Andre Consolano. It's on the two turntables, and I'd introduce one, then play the other, and so it would be the wrong one. I'd go, well, that's not it. So I'd turn the turntable off, and it would slowly coast to a stop on the air, and then I went to the other record and wowed that. And it just is a comedy of errors, and I guess
it's you know, there's a lot to do. I mean, I'm a print journalist, as you know, and you know, I write a story and go back and edit it. But even for these little 2 hours, and I mean, you got to fly by the seat of your pants, and it is live, you know.
Yeah, it is live. You always got to remember that, because if you do something wrong and say the wrong thing or the wrong word, and you think, oh, we're just taping this, so we're okay. You can edit that out later, and the director will go, no, we're live too. So it's too late.
What are you going to miss the most about this?
Seeing the technology evolve from what it has. When I first got into the business, everything was tubes. Television was black and white, not very good black and white at that. We'd need thousands of watts of lighting just so you could see people. If the air conditioning wasn't working, you were in big trouble.
Yeah.
And now... When you look, we not only have nice equipment, but we have a good view, too.
Yeah.
A lot of times, the radio station was kind of relegated to the broom closet.
Right.
And TV got the priority as far as the space in the building, and the radio station would be down the hall in the room with the mops hanging on the wall.
Well, radio, I don't need to tell you this. It just, you do have a very unique relationship with the listener. It's very, very personal.
Yeah.
You know, and I've learned that in the 4 years I hear. I really think about the people listening to the show, and especially on a Saturday night, connecting with them and stuff. Mm-hmm. And it's really unique. It remains unique.
And that's the trick, is to engage people.
Yeah.
You know, one by one.
Yeah.
And but there's all different kinds of ways. You know, we're here to persuade, to indoctrinate, to sell soap. You know, whatever we have to do. And so there's a lot of ideas on the radio. You can, there's a lot of power in sound. You know, Kathy and Judy did a thing. Says, you want to see how powerful radio is? And Kathy goes, come on, you want to go outside? I want to go outside. And he's like, you'd talk to a dog, you know, before you take him outside. He must have had 100 callers mad because their dog piddled on the floor by the front door. So excited to get out of the house. And, you know, I've worked with people that would yell at their cats, you know, on the air. It says, get out from there. Don't eat that. Leave her alone.
Well, Aubrey, thanks for all your help.
Thanks for
walking me through this. I know a little bit more now, but I'm not, you know.
We scratched the surface. I was kind of scared to get too deep into it because in Chicago, I had a lot of experiences here. But I'm so glad I came to Chicago, and it's my hometown now. And I could go back to Cheyenne, and I could go back to Aspen, but it'll only be for visiting.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to miss you.
Well, I'll miss you too, but, you know, don't count your chickens yet. Okay. Every other time they've gotten rid of me, it's always like maybe a week later I'm back here again. So,
okay. All right. Thanks, Aubrey. Mumpower.